Welcome back to the deep dive. I want you to just picture a setting for a moment. You're surrounded by palm trees. The trade winds are blowing. Maybe you can hear the ocean.
Sounds like a vacation.
It sounds like the ultimate vacation spot, right? But now imagine dropping a massive, rigid, bureaucratic structure right in the middle of all that. I'm talking about the U.S. federal government.
It is quite the juxtaposition, isn't it? You have the aloha spirit on one side, and then you've got standard operating procedures, chain of command, mountains of paperwork on the other.
Exactly. And that collision where this, rigid world of federal bureaucracy meets the warm, family-centric culture of Hawaii, that is exactly where we're heading today. We're unpacking a really fascinating dissertation from 2023 by Vernon Stanley Brown. It's titled Supervisor Influence on Employee Psychological Safety in U.S. Federal Government Organizations.
And the key here is the specific focus.
Yeah.
He looked at federal employees stationed in Hawaii. It's such a unique petri dish for organizational behavior.
How so?
Well, you can really isolate how a local culture can change the way a massive monolithic organization actually functions on the ground.
So our mission for today is to figure out what makes these employees feel safe enough to speak up, to take risks, to be honest. We're going to look at this unique Ohana culture, the specific soft skills that supervisors need, and this looming antagonist in the data that the participants call the big castle.
That big castle metaphor is so powerful, and we'll definitely get to it.
Yeah.
But I think to start, we should probably make sure we're all on the same page about what we're actually talking about. We throw around this term psychological safety a lot.
It's a total buzzword. I feel like I see it on LinkedIn every other day.
Yeah.
But in the context of this research, what are we really looking at? Is it just everyone being nice to each other?
None at all. And that's a really common misconception. Psychological safety, a concept really championed by Amy Edmondson, isn't about being nice or, cozy.
Okay.
It's about the shared belief that it is safe to take interpersonal risks.
Risks like admitting you made a mistake or
Maybe.
asking a dumb question.
Exactly. Admitting a mistake, asking that dumb question, or maybe even challenging the boss's plan. It's the belief that you won't be humiliated, punished, or, marginalized for being vulnerable.
That is a high bar, especially in a government setting, which is, I mean, historically known for being hierarchical and risk averse.
Right. The federal government is designed for stability, not necessarily for vulnerability. So Brown's research is asking, how does psychological safety even survive in that environment? And the answer starts with the culture on the ground.
Let's dive into that first layer then, the flavor of the workplace. Brown's data showed that for these employees in Hawaii, the office doesn't feel like a typical government cubicle farm. It feels more like a family.
This was one of the strongest themes to emerge. Brown calls it the supportive network that is family-like.
Which sounds a bit academic.
It does. The participants themselves, they didn't use that phrasing. They used one word, ohana.
Right. And I think most people know that term from pop culture, right? Lilo and Stitch, ohana means family. But in this workplace context, it seems to go a lot deeper than just a cute label.
It really does. There was a participant, Sophia, who was very explicit. She said her workplace is like family or ohana. And in the Hawaiian context, ohana isn't just about blood relations. It's about a deep, binding sense of responsibility to one another.
So it creates a kind of safety net.
Precisely. Another participant, Abigail, described it perfectly. She acknowledged that just like a real family, the workplace has its ups and downs.
Sure.
They have conflict, they have bad days. But because the foundation is ohana, they remain a supportive unit. The conflict doesn't, shatter the relationship.
That's a huge buffer. If I screw up a report, but I know you see me as Ohana, I'm not terrified you're going to throw me under the
Right,
bus.
we're going to fix it together.
Yeah.
And there's a specific mechanism they use to build this, something called talk story.
Talk story. I saw that phrase pop up a lot in the source. To an outsider or maybe a strict efficiency expert, that just sounds like wasting time.
It's easy to misinterpret it as just gossiping or water cooler chat, but in the local culture, talking story is really the currency of trust. A participant named Camila explained this so well. She said they talk about random things, their kids, what they ate over the weekend, just life.
And that casual conversation is actually doing the heavy lifting.
It's doing the heaviest lifting. Camila noted that because they talk story, they form a tight unit. When you know someone as a human being with their struggles and their joys, you trust them professionally. So when the work gets hard, that foundation is already there.
It's interesting because the study contrasts this Hawaii way with what they call the mainland mentality.
Yes, the mainland or the DC mindset.
A participant named Mateo made a really sharp observation about this. He said the mainland culture is mission valued. It's all about the objective.
Whereas in Hawaii, it's people valued. That's a critical distinction. The mission-valued approach views an employee as a tool to get the job done. If the tool breaks, you replace it.
But the people-valued approach says what?
It says if we take care of the person, the mission will get done and probably get done better.
Mateo even mentioned that sometimes the Hawaii branch felt undervalued because of this. They were seen as what? Too relaxed or too soft?
Exactly. But what the research suggests is that this people-first approach is actually what makes them effective. It's the paradox of efficiency. Sometimes slowing down to ask about someone's weekend is the fastest way to build the trust you need to execute a complex project later.
Okay, so we have this peer-level safety, the ohana. That's the base. But peers don't sign your performance review.
No, they don't.
Peers don't promote you. We have to talk about the boss.
The immediate supervisor. And this is the central focus of Brown's dissertation. He looked at this through the lens of transformational leadership theory, which is basically about how leaders inspire and change their teams.
And the findings here were pretty clear. Just being good at your job isn't enough to be a good leader.
Not even close. You can know the federal code backward and forward, but if you don't have the soft skills, you cannot create psychological safety. The participants were absolutely craving a humanist approach.
There was a specific phrase used by a participant named Ethan that I wrote down. He talked about connective tissue.
Yes, that is such a vital concept. Ethan explained that supervisors need to build these interpersonal relationships, doing things outside of just assigning tasks to create that connective tissue.
And why is that tissue so important?
Well, think about what connective tissue does in the body. It allows muscles and bones to move together without tearing.
Okay.
Ethan's point was that if you have that relationship, that connective tissue, it helps you navigate hard feedback later on.
So if you and I have that connective tissue and you tell me my work isn't up to scratch, I hear it as coaching.
Exactly. You trust my intent. But if we don't have that tissue and I give you the exact same feedback, you hear it as an attack. You get defensive. The safety is gone.
This leads to a really practical part of the study. How do you actually build that tissue? Because a lot of bosses just say, "My door is always open," and they think that's enough.
The famous open door policy. Brown's research suggests this is actually a bit of a fallacy. It's passive. It puts the entire burden of engagement on the employee.
And in a federal hierarchy, walking through the boss's door is scary. I don't care how nice they are, it always feels like you're going to the principal's office.
It does. The power dynamic is always there. So the study found that for psychological safety to really thrive, the engagement has to be bidirectional. The supervisor needs to walk out of their office.
There was a great example of this from a participant, Mia. She talked about potlucks.
The monthly potluck lunches. Now, again, to a mission-valued outsider, this might look like a distraction, but Mia explained that these lunches were critical. They broke down the barriers.
It flattens the hierarchy for an hour.
It does. When the supervisor sits down and eats with the team, shares food, laughs at a joke, it humanizes them. It signals, "I am part of this ohana too."
And Henry, another participant, said something similar. He called talking about non-work things an icebreaker. He said, "You have to grease the wheels with conversation about sports or the news before you can tackle the difficult work problems."
That's the connective tissue in action. If a supervisor waits for a crisis to talk to their team, it's already too late. You have to build the bridge before you need to cross it. Brown's findings are really a loud wake-up call that soft skills, empathy, listening, approachability are actually the hard skills of leadership.
Okay, so we have the warm, fuzzy ohana. We have the immediate supervisors trying to be human and build bridges. But then we hit a wall, or I guess we hit the castle.
The big castle.
That was the most striking image in the entire study for me. This came from Henry again, right?
Yes. Henry used this metaphor to describe senior leadership. Not his direct boss, but the upper echelon, the people at the very top of the chart. He described them as living in a big castle.
Let's unpack that image. A castle is fortified. It's got high walls, a moat. It's designed to keep people out.
And the people inside the castle are usually looking down on the people outside. It just perfectly captures the disconnect that the study found.
Oh.
While employees felt safe with their peers and, you know, often with their direct supervisors, they saw senior leadership as out of touch, too busy, or just distant.
There was a quote from a participant named Joe that was really disheartening. He said, upper-level leadership doesn't view our concerns the same way direct leadership does.
And gets the consequence of that feeling. Because of that disconnect, Joe says, I have since refrained from offering up new ideas.
That is the sound of innovation just dying on the vine.
It is. That is the tangible cost of low psychological safety. Joe might have the solution to a huge problem. He might know how to save the department $1 million. But he's keeping his mouth shut.
Why?
Because he feels the big castle just doesn't care.
It seems like there's a massive gap here between perception and reality, because I bet if you ask those senior leaders, they'd say they're very involved.
Oh, I'm sure they would. They'd point to their town halls, their mass emails, their newsletters. But that's just accessibility theater. True accessibility is relational, and employees perceive the leaders as distant because there's no personal interaction.
And Brown points out that the very structure of the federal government makes this worse.
Especially in Hawaii, where there's a heavy military influence in these agencies. The military is built on a strict chain of command. That's necessary for a battlefield.
But not for an office where you want innovation.
Exactly. Aiden, another participant, mentioned that he avoids management because they just seem unapproachable. That avoidance is a survival mechanism in a rigid hierarchy. The big castle isn't just a metaphor in their heads, it's reinforced by the org chart.
So we have this tension. The immediate supervisors are this buffer, trying to create a pocket of ohana, while the big castle looms overhead. But let me play devil's advocate for a second. Why does this matter? We're talking about government employees. The stereotype is that they're just there to punch the clock. Does feeling safe actually change the work?
It changes everything, and Brown's study provides the receipts on this. The very first major theme in his findings was impactful to motivation and quality of work.
So it's not just about feelings, it's about actual performance.
Correct. When employees feel safe, they don't just feel better, they work better. A participant named Daniel noted that when safety is present, problem solving improves. People collaborate more. They're not afraid to reach out to external stakeholders.
They aren't hiding in their silos.
Right. They're sharing information. And Abigail made this brilliant point about excellence. She said because she feels secure, because she knows her supervisor has her back, she can do things in excellence. Why? Because she isn't afraid to ask questions.
That is such a key point. If I'm afraid of looking stupid, I'm not going to ask for clarification. I'm just going to guess.
And in federal work, guessing is dangerous. It leads to compliance violations, security breaches, wasted budget. Psychological safety allows for the clarifying question. It allows someone to say, I don't understand this instruction, which saves so much time and money down the road.
It really reframes the whole concept then. Safety isn't a perk. It's a prerequisite for quality work.
Exactly. And it drives innovation. We talked about Joe staying silent. But when safety is high, people offer those new ideas. In the Hawaii context, the Ohana spirit actually supercharges this. Because you see your team as family. You want to do a good job for them.
Your motivation shifts.
It shifts from, I have to do this to avoid getting fired, to I want to do this to help my ohana. That's a much more sustainable fuel source for motivation.
No, we can't discuss a study from 2023 without talking about the elephant in the room. This research took place in the shadow of the COVID-19 pandemic. And Brown found that the pandemic was a major disruptor to this whole ecosystem.
It was a massive variable. He refers to it as a negative emergence. I mean, we've spent this whole time talking about how important talk story is, how important face-to-face potlucks are. So what happens when you send everyone home?
The connective tissue just starts to dissolve.
It does. You can't really talk story effectively on a scheduled Zoom call with 20 other people. The spontaneity is just gone.
The study mentioned telework challenges as a specific code in the data. It seems like the physical separation made the big castle feel even bigger, even more distant.
It absolutely did. If senior leadership felt distant when they were just down the hall, imagine how distant they feel when they're just a name on an email chain.
Yeah.
The physical isolation just calcified the barriers between the hierarchy levels.
And it's interesting because telework is often sold as this great benefit. Work from home, you'll love it. But for a culture that relies so heavily on human connection for its sense of safety, it was actually damaging.
It exposed a vulnerability. It showed that psychological safety in this context is deeply relational. It relies on presence. And when you take that away, you have to work 10 times harder to maintain the trust.
And I imagine a lot of supervisors who were used to managing by walking around suddenly felt lost.
They were. They didn't have the tools to build connective tissue digitally. It's a huge lesson for the future of work. If you're going remote, you have to be incredibly intentional about recreating those water cooler moments, or the trust will just erode.
So let's try to bring this all together. We've looked at the Ohana culture, the supervisor's role, the friction with senior leadership, and the impact of the pandemic. If we were to write a prescription, a recipe for psychological safety based on these findings, what are the key ingredients?
I think there are three essential ingredients here.
Okay, lay them out for us. Ingredient number one.
Embrace the Ohana. You have to encourage that peer-to-peer support. Don't view chatting and talking story as time theft. View it as team building. That's your base layer of resilience.
So let the team be human with each other. Okay, ingredient number two.
Active humanist leadership. Supervisors have to prioritize soft skills. It's not enough to be a technical expert. You need to build that connective tissue before a crisis hits and stop waiting for people to come to you. The open door is a myth. You have to walk out and engage.
Break bread. Go to the potluck. And the final ingredient.
Lower the drawbridge. We have to address the big castle. Senior leadership needs to close that gap between their perception and the employee's reality. They need to be seen. They need to be human. They need to prove they value the people, not just the mission.
It really challenges the traditional definition of professionalism, doesn't it? We're taught that being professional means being objective, detached, unemotional. But this research says the opposite.
In Hawaii, at least, and I'd argue everywhere, being professional means being personal. Brown's research shows that the most effective federal organizations didn't fight the local culture. They embraced it. They used the Ohana concept to make the rigid hierarchy bearable.
It's a powerful lesson. You can't just copy-paste a management style from D.C. to Honolulu and expect it to work.
You have to respect the soil you're planting in. And you have to realize that psychological safety isn't a policy you can write in a memo. You can't just mandate, starting Monday, everyone will feel like family.
It doesn't work that way.
No, it's a behavior. It happens in the micro-interactions, the hallway chats, the way you handle a single mistake.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave our listeners with a thought to mull over. Whether you work in a federal building in Honolulu, a tech startup in Austin, or a hospital in London.
It comes back to Henry's metaphor for me.
The castle.
Yes. I want you to look at your own organization. Look at your own leadership style. Are you building a family? Are you out there creating that connective tissue? Or are you sitting in a big castle wondering why your team is so quiet?
Because if it's quiet in your castle, it's probably not because everything is perfect.
No. It's because they're afraid of the walls you built.
That is a powerful place to leave it. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into Vernon Stanley Brown's dissertation. Hopefully it helps you build a little more Ohana in your own workplace. We'll see you next time.